This is the fourth episode of the Walk Podcast.
Would you walk with me today? Would you walk with me tomorrow? And if you walk with me today, I'll never cause you any pain. I'll never cause you any sorrow. Would you walk with me forever?
Hi, my name is Cindy Lehman. I'm the former editor and publisher of the now folded Walk magazine and the host of the Walk podcast. In this episode, I have the opportunity to talk to Darris Blackford. He is the race director of the Nationwide Children's Hospital Columbus Marathon. The interview ended up going a little bit long, but it was such a fun conversation, I left in as much of it as I possibly could. We talked about what it's like to be a race director in general, but also the effect walkers have on races. I hope you enjoy it. I had to point out that there is one weird cut early on in the interview where it sounds like Darris is cut off in the middle of a sentence. That weird edit was unavoidable. It was an audio malfunction. In addition, we recorded this episode at the Athletic Club of Columbus, and there was a little bit of background noise I wasn't aware of. I took out as much of it as I could without affecting the quality of the audio. But there is a little bit of Christmas music, a little bit of traffic going by, the fans kick on and off, and at one point we even have a couple people who walked into the room and started having a conversation behind us. Regardless, I think you're going to enjoy the interview.
Would you walk with me? And if you walk with me, I'll walk with you for eternity.
In our conversation before we start recording, you said you've been director of the Columbus Marathon for 4 years.
Since 2010, correct. Okay.
How did you get the job?
It was a right place at the right time thing for me. I have been doing the marketing for the event for a couple of years, but I've been involved with the event since 1999 officially, and it was my first marathon in 1991.
Oh.
So it seems like it's been kind of a long process. But in 2010, after having done the marketing for a few years, the board of directors, after doing the marketing for a couple of years, the board of directors decided to make a management change.
Mm-hmm.
There had been a company that had been running the race, and they asked if I would step up and become the director.
So I take it the board is your boss?
The board is my boss, that's correct.
Okay.
It's interesting because it's a nonprofit organization, and no one works for the event itself. We're all basically freelancers, myself as well as the people on the team that work with me. But I'm the only person who does this all the time.
And how much do you have a staff?
I call it a team. It's really basically, I am the full-time person that does this. And then the people that work with me, they're basically freelancing their services. So we
okay.
have one person who does the course operations, for example. It's not his full-time job. He has a full-time job, but during we start getting into the season of sorts, when we get into the summertime and our planning in August and September, he basically starts doing more work with it. Same with the guy who's involved with entertainment and our volunteer coordinator. Well, there's little things maybe that she might be doing here and there.
And you said your first marathon was the Columbus Marathon.
That's
correct.
How many
have you done total?
I have done quite a few. I've done over 100.
Wow.
But I don't golf, so I have a lot of free time.
I've trained for a full marathon, so I know how much time it takes. Well, it takes me a lot longer than you, because I'm a little slower than you are. But
no, we don't say slow. We don't say slow only or things like that. It's all about the accomplishment.
Yeah, but you have to admit, it's a whole lot quicker for you to do a 20-mile training run than it would be for me to do a 20-mile training run.
Well.
What's your average run, your average pace?
So, you know, I have literally done 5.5 hours and 2 hours and 45 minutes. So
okay.
I've done a lot of different times
okay.
throughout the years.
Do you have a favorite marathon?
You know, I mean, certainly you'd think I would say Columbus, and I do have a very strong affinity for this race, not only because it was my first, but because I've done the race itself 15 times.
Nice.
And I love the event for what it is in terms of the excitement and the energy. I really enjoy the Marine Corps Marathon. I've been very fortunate to do that one. And to me, being on the streets of Washington, no cars, no traffic, nothing even parked on the streets, and to see the monuments and to see it's such a great feel. And then my single favorite spot in all the marathons I've done is mile 16 of the St. George Marathon. It's a beautiful downhill section leading into this canyon that is just absolutely fantastic. Just a beautiful view. That's my single favorite spot.
Where's St. George?
In Utah.
Okay.
So, southern Utah.
Well, I understand that having the affection for the first marathon, because I did Air Force. Mm-hmm. It's the only full marathon I've ever done. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely love that race because it's the full I've done.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and my favorite, I could always put Cleveland in there because it's where I PR'd, even though there wasn't much to look at. But when you run well somewhere, you sort of have an affinity for it because of those outlying reasons.
Yeah, but when I've done the Cleveland half, it's lonely. I mean, being up there along the water.
It really is.
And it was a rainy day, and the wind was blowing, so up along the lake, it was not real pleasant. One of the things that I've noticed over the years is that the whole attitude toward Columbus Marathon has changed. Like, I don't know if you knew, I was walking director way, way, way back when. So even when I was associated with Marathon, I thought it was it was a race. It was okay. It was an event that took up time downtown, but I didn't know anyone who felt like they absolutely had to do the Columbus Marathon. And for a couple of years, my friends and I went up and did Detroit instead. But now there's a different energy, and people get excited about it. And most of my friends who walk register as early as they can, and it's more of a fun event, and people are like, they can't wait to do the Columbus Marathon. Total turnaround from like 2000. So what do you think the difference is?
You know, it's all because of me. No.
That's what we think, but I didn't know what you think.
No, I don't even believe that. There's definitely a spirit that I believe has overtaken the event, but it's not any one person. It's probably a group of people and collectively the whole community. Certainly the board of directors being an active participating group helps. The board members run or walk the event. Most of them do it every year or have done it before, and I think they bring a feel to it where they care about it. And I think that also shows in our community. Our community had seen the event go through some challenging times, but now the running and walking community, whether it's the fitness stores, the new stores we have here with Fleet Feet and Second Soul's not so new, but they've been around, and the Columbus Running Company, their stores are new, and Front Runners, now it's growing.
Yeah, I think it's been there forever.
But now they have a new store too. Yeah. So I think that whole those groups are and those that sort of base has grown, and that's sort of developed more of the attitude. But then it also has to be reflected back in. You could have all these people that want it to be great, but there has to be a spirit of then making it great. And I believe that the board's direction, and then they're allowing myself and the people who are involved to try new things has helped. And also, I think it helps that myself and the other people involved have gone to other races. The board chairman, for example, he travels to different races, and the vice chairman and the different people, they travel to different cities and see different things. A number of them have done Ironman events, and they see those fun events that really the bar has been raised, and because of that, it sort of is reflected back. But I think it's one of those things that trying to do better means you have to work harder, and it's a combination there. I would also say that one of the things that has helped make the event better is that the other events in town have gotten better. As Cap City has gotten better, and the Columbus Marathon the following 6 months tries to do a little bit better, and then they try to do better, and it's a nice back and forth relationship, and we all do get along, which helps. Mm-hmm. And instead of competing in a negative way, we sort of try to outdo each other in a fun way, and it's I think it's reflected that way.
And you're right, Cap City has become another one of those must-do events where before we would wait to see what the weather was going to be like.
Exactly.
Especially after that blizzard.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I was there. I remember that. I did that event that year, and I've seen them get better. And we all just, I think we just care more as a community. And at the same time, when you're out there doing these events and people see you at these events, and then they maybe it's the social media mystique, or not mystique, but the social media just changed, and now people can confront you and challenge you on things a lot more, maybe just the day and age that we live in, where you have to work to get better, or else they're gonna come right on and say something. It's funny, I was talking to someone the other day about how before, if you had something that you complained about or whatever, you know, you could leave a voice message or you could write a letter. But now you can write a letter that everybody can see, and so
right.
You sort of have to be on your toes now. And I think it's done a good job to make everything a little bit better. There's also challenges. There's days I don't want to see those messages, but
I can imagine. Well, part of some of the things that you do that I think help make Columbus fun are the fireworks. Like the first year you did fireworks, I'm way back in Corral D, I didn't see anything, and it was, you're like, oh, well, that's cool that the elite runners who don't care got to see fireworks. But then this year when you did them for every corral, that was really fun. And I can tell the people in D were so excited that we were not ignored. So I think that's one of the things that makes a big difference.
Well, it's funny because a year and a half or 2 years ago, I was looking through a race program from another race, and they had a picture of the leader of this race. It might have been New York, it might have been Boston, just a photo of this person, but the angle of the photo was over the shoulder of this athlete as he was approaching the finish line.
Okay.
And the crowd was going crazy, and you could see all the splendor of the event. And I thought to myself, that's what I want all of our athletes to feel. I want everybody to feel like they are, it's their Olympics, it's their moment in the sun. That's where we said, how can we make it so everybody has the same experience? Now, sure, you can't do 18,000 fireworks,
no,
because that just wouldn't work, but at least we tried to break it up to make it to where more people could feel the excitement of the start line. The same thing with the finish, we're trying to make it better. And there's certainly things that you can do to make the experience better. There's things we have to do to make it better for longer periods of time. We run into challenges that, unlike a family get-together that can go into the wee hours of the morning, for example, and everybody can continue to have a lot of fun, we have a limited amount of time based upon the rules that the city imposes upon us. So we have certain guidelines we have to follow in terms of closing things down and things like that, but we need to do a better job to make the folks who are taking more time feel as much as the people who are taking half as much time when it comes to the end of the race. We've
right.
got the beginning dialed in pretty well. There's certainly some things we still want to do to make the experience better for everybody at the start, but now we need to work on the other end of it. And those are things that I think from an experience of being out there, having done events myself, and I've taken longer, and experience of what it's like not to be the person in the lead or be the person who's in the top whatever, has allowed me to understand that. At the same time, that's where social media comes into it. Now I learn from people of the experiences they had because they tell us what it was that they liked as well as what they didn't like. And that's where we do our surveys and things like that. The survey results aren't just percentage, the percentage of people that come from County XYZ, but the comments that people give us, whether there was 1,000 comments to one of our questions on our survey this year, and I'm reading through every single one of those, not because I want to know all the good things, I want to know what nugget did we do something wrong.
Right.
And I've already gained some really good insights on things that we're going to offer at next year's event, just because someone decided to put a little nugget in there of whatever it was that they thought might make it better. Because, you know, I'm never going to act like we know what we're never going to act like we know everything. And nor should we. It's always, you can always be humble enough to learn something from someone.
Well, and I've met race directors who kind of get an attitude, and they're like, oh, well, I'm always going to get complaints, so they don't pay any attention. it's really nice knowing that you're the exact opposite.
You have to be, because you're only going to be so... I've seen other events that I thought were the pinnacle, and there's some that I won't name, but certainly in the state of Ohio, that I felt have kind of lost their edge a little bit, because it seems like they've gotten too comfortable with, oh, we're doing great and people love us. That's only as good as you were. And if you don't at least continue to try to get better, explain even, we're trying our best, people will give you, they'll cut you some slack if they at least know you're working on it and you respond to them.
Right.
And that's the thing that we aren't just going to say, oh, we're listening. We're going to actually put those things into effect if we can, and to make the event better. It comes down to, I learned this from other people, you're not the person that makes the event or breaks the event one way or the other in and of itself. You're a caretaker. I have, for the time that I'm doing this job, I'm the custodian of the event. It's been around longer than me, and it's going to hopefully, knock on wood, be around longer than me. And I want to leave it in better shape than I found it, but that's by working harder to do that. So then leave it to someone else after me who has to worry about making it better, because I set the bar pretty high. If we can leave it better than we found it and people are happy, then that's great.
You have come up with some pretty new and fun things in addition to the fireworks, like your videos that are on Facebook. Those are pretty fun.
Yeah.
They look like you have fun doing them.
It is a lot of fun. And we have to not take ourselves so seriously. Yeah. It is, while it is a serious event, and for some people this is their major life challenge, whether they're trying to get themselves in shape or overcoming weight loss or overcoming some illness or otherwise, you know, some bucket list type of thing, we always have to look back. At the end of the day, this is not something that is so serious. It might be life changing, but it's not life threatening. So therefore, we need to keep a fun attitude about it.
But one of the things I've noticed from looking at your Facebook page and other things is, no matter what you do, people are going to hate the shirts and love the shirts. And no matter what you do, people are going to love the food and hate the food.
That's true. But we still need to agree with some of those things and not be afraid to say you're right or make the changes that we do feel are justified. I'll give you an example with the shirts. The fit and the sizing and all that is not our fault. It's a Nike athletic cut.
Mm-hmm.
But yet people that are used to sizing as a small, medium, or large of a different brand, and then they try the athletic cut, it doesn't work. I can't say it's your fault, but we can at least do a better job of explaining again and again and again the sizing, the cut is from a particular brand manufacturer, and maybe, for example, urge them to go try that. Go to a store and try on that cut, and then maybe adjust it that way. Messaging. You come up with a theme, and you try to carry that theme forward. We had a lot of positives on our themes. We also have people who don't like a theme, and you can only try to vary it enough to make it fun and exciting, but you also have to, at the end of the day, say, yeah, not everybody's going to love everything you do. The food is one of those areas that I do think we can do a better job of. We're somewhat bound through partnerships and sponsorships on what we're provided, and I'm very thankful when a company comes on board to support us and to provide us with the food or the beverages or whatever it is we're supplying. But we also can work to vary it even more. And especially in this day and age when you have so much more segmented food choices with things like gluten-free or whatever choices are out there, we can at least try to vary it. But we also can be even more diligent in our messaging to say, we're not trying to provide a Thanksgiving feast. We want to provide variety, but you also do have some of your own requirements that if there's certain things you like, you have a bag that you can put it in. We'll have that bag waiting for you. But we can always do better, and we'll always continue to try to do better.
Yeah, I was just thrilled this year that not only was it a reusable grocery bag, which was, I have tons of those, so I use them all the time, but each person got one. And there was no opportunity for someone to walk off with other people's food. The one year when there were still Krispy Kreme donuts, I saw a guy walking away with a box of 12 donuts, and I said to him, there are people behind you who would like to have a donut. And he just walked right on by me like he didn't care. And I was so frustrated at that moment because there's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do. But if you hand everybody one bag, which is what Detroit does, and which other races have done, it works out great because no one can complain. You have as many as there are people in the race. And
the Krispy Kreme moment is the moment when it was determined to have separate bags. I don't believe, I think that was the year before I was director.
It might have been. It's been a while.
But I'd been involved with the race, but I'd also run the race, and I think I probably ran the race that year, and I felt, I saw the same thing you saw, and you can't, if you have a dozen donuts and someone takes a box, that means 11 people aren't going to get a donut at some point in time, and you multiply that by the number of boxes that were going. And because of that, I made the determination, we have to come up with an equitable way to do this. Well, I did the Marine Corps Marathon that same year. They had the food in the bag. Well, there's a logical idea. Let's put it in a bag, and everybody gets one bag, therefore everybody's going to get something. So it's just a matter of, it was no great brainstorm. It was, wow, someone else has figured it out type of thing.
Yeah, with Detroit, they're a little more even strict with that. You get a little tiny brown bag, and it's one bagel, one banana, one bottle of water, and you're out. And, you know, some people complained because it was what it was, but everybody got one, so I was happy. And the fact that I'm a slower person, I really, really appreciate the fact that the slow people end up having something. And with the Krispy Kreme, what really killed me was I finished around 3:15 that year, and I had friends who finished a little slower than I did, and there were no donuts left when they finished. So I imagine probably 75% of the marathoners didn't even know there were donuts.
I can promise you that. You will, as long as I am involved, you will never see that kind of inequity of food distribution.
The one thing I felt so funny about this year was I love chocolate milk, and so when there's chocolate milk, I immediately chug it because it's wonderful. And a year ago, my friend Deb was complaining that she was so tired she couldn't open the milk. She kept saying, can't they just open it for me? And I walked up this year, and the guy opened the milk and handed it to me. And I thought, oh, Deb would be so happy.
Well, we didn't get that message. He was just being kind.
He was being very kind. Maybe I look like I needed someone to open it for him. I think we did. I think we killed the food topic. I know that's one of the things you get the most complaints about. When I first started doing marathons and half marathons, I felt like there was a snob attitude from runners. That it was sort of like, well, you're walking, and so you're really insignificant. But the more I do races, I'm seeing there are more and more walkers out there, and it seems to be that the slow runners and the faster walkers seem to be where most of the growth is coming from. Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the runners become walkers as well because they haven't done a good job of preparing themselves, where the smart walkers become faster and the same because they're, you know.
I love passing those runners.
Yeah, there's a correlation there too. You know, it's, I definitely think that's where you're seeing growth. I don't know if that's the fastest growth as much as just that's been a steady, continuous growth of the walking community. And I believe certainly in our town, it may even be reflected more strongly because there seems to be a little bit more of a concerted effort to focus on walking. We have walking groups here in town, walking clubs. I don't know in other communities, in other cities where there's other events, if they have such a focused effort on that. But either way, I also think it's partly because we are working, and again, knock on wood, we'll continue to make progress in terms of embracing the walking community, whereas other events do, for whatever reason, either have that snobbery or just don't have that appreciation for what a community in general can be. Instead of treating it as walkers and runners, we try very strongly to just use the words athletes. And that's a messaging that we want to continue to carry because it's, when I first started in getting involved in marathons, it was during, you know, like I said, 1991, I believe, was my first year. And there was a lot more of the running focus and focus on the time. And if you weren't fast, you weren't good. And, you know, cutoffs were at 5 hours or whatever it was. And it's just not, I don't think it's sensible. in terms of the economics of your event. I just also don't think it's fair. Why would you close yourself off to an audience that wants to participate in the event? So therefore, we just try to be embracing to everyone. And the bigger challenge is explaining that to the people that maybe still are quote unquote old school and are not really appreciative of what you're trying to do. But I think that the tide has turned with more participants wanting to be out there, whether they're running or walking, that the message will slowly get through everywhere.
What percentage of the participants do you think are walkers?
You know, it varies. When we ask the question, we actually have people register as a walker.
Right.
And it tends to be in the thousands. We get 2,500, 3,500 people that will consider themselves officially as a walker. However, we have a lot of people who just don't pay attention to the box, and they get out there and they participate. So I would say we're looking at probably, you know, maybe as much as 40%.
Really?
Yeah, and it seems to be a very strong. Again, it's also people that maybe didn't intend to classify themselves, but they end up walking. But you know, the numbers are fairly high.
Boy, that's a lot bigger than I would have thought.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very impressed with the. With the way it's going, in terms of it makes us happy that we can continue to be embracing an audience that wants to be out there for the sake of being out there. But I also think that we have some improvement to make to continue to be welcoming, whether you use this for this or not. But off the record, I'd like to talk to you more about this when you were the walking director, because that might be the step that we need to take to become more quote unquote official with regards to the walking community. We need to be learning more of what we need to do to make the whole team and the whole effort embracing of the walking community. Not just saying we're walker friendly. Walker friendly is sure if you want to walk, great, but we also need to figure out what it is. What does that mean, walker friendly? We tried to make the change. I feel for the better. With regards to those people that want to be competitive, having the competitive walker division, but at the same time, it's a challenge in that we want more people to be part of that, but they don't necessarily understand how it works. But yet we also can't be. It's hard to be judging of a group when you only, because we have to have strict rules on how you participate.
Right.
So it's you know, we're learning, we're trying to get better, and I think the only way we're going to get better is by learning more how to you know, the lessons we can learn to do a better job.
Can you explain how the competitive walking division works?
Sure. So what happens if someone, like I said, we have thousands of people who are just out there to take part in the event, whether they're walking for time or they're just walking to finish, that's a group of people that are branded as a quote-unquote walker. But then we have a specific category called the competitive walker division, where it's people who are going to compete for prizes, which basically is a age group or an overall plaque signifying how they did. So I'm going to become a competitive walker. I'm not just going to walk the race, I'm going to try to win it, try to walk it to secure one of the awards. I show up at the expo, I go to what's called the competitive walker table, and I say, hey, I want to take part in the competitive walker division. I'm given a bib to put on the back of my shirt that says I'm a competitive walker, and I'm also given a sticker that I put on the front of my shirt. That then designates that I'm, quote unquote, in this division, and I'm going to compete for one of the prizes. By branding yourself that way, that allows our volunteer, our captains, like our water stop captains, our my team, others who are on the course, to keep an eye out, to try to create a level of competitiveness and fairness for the people who declare themselves in that division. It's basically, if someone is wearing that sticker or that back bib and they're seen as and they're jogging, then and one of the captains or water station captains or one of the people on my team sees them running, all of a sudden they're looking out for that. Mm-hmm. And then they'll basically write that person's number down, and then we keep a list, and then they're basically able to tell me. And I'm the one who actually tabulates the people who do this, that, 1197 was seen as running. And then I'm basically able to confront that person and say, oh, you know, you were a competitive walker, but when I went back, you had one of our spotters said that they saw you running, so we're not going to be able to consider you for one of the awards. And that's basically it. People declare themselves. It's we have, just like other age groups, we have categories, 20 to 29, 30 to 39, so on and so forth. And if people turn in their bib and they want to be considered part of that category, then we'll consider them and we'll check to make sure there's no infractions, and they can be eligible for the awards. But you as a walker maybe took part in it, and you were a 30 to 39 year old woman in the half marathon,
and you
were a walker. But you didn't declare yourself to be in the competitive walker division, even though your time might have been faster than the person who was in that. That's how it works.
Okay.
It's a category that we've created, and we always want to refine it, but it's actually worked out pretty well, where people get to kind of be a little bit special treated within the category.
Well, and I know that some of the people who didn't realize that the competitive walkers, it takes a little longer for you to tabulate the results, they get a little freaked out when they saw the first walkers and that they would have had Olympic race walking times.
But see, some of those people didn't know they were even, some of those people didn't even declare themselves a walker, or maybe they accidentally checked the walker box.
That's what I figured.
Or they decided, hey, I'm feeling good, I'm going to go ahead and run, or whatever. So
yeah.
That's where I think our solution there is to not post the walker results by themselves, but to post the competitive walker and create the division that is the end all be all. By competitive walker, you're the ones who are being honored, and the other walker category doesn't count because it's really not a true measure of the capabilities of the people.
That might reduce the number of angry emails you get immediately after the walker results are posted. Okay, we're going to get to a serious topic now. The bombing at Boston was pretty horrible, and I can say I never in a million years saw something like that would happen. So I was shocked that anyone would think about doing that. How has that affected race directors and Columbus specifically?
Well, it affected me very seriously because I was there, and I was in my hotel room, which overlooked the finish line, and I was had just gotten back from the race and had turned the TV on to see if there's any local coverage, and there was soap operas on. And next thing I know is I hear and feel a loud explosion. And I thought to myself very quickly, oh, that doesn't seem right. We don't have explosions or fireworks now. You have them at the start. Maybe when the winner comes across the line, they did something special, but that's happened hours ago. I got up and started walking to the window, and before I got to the window, I felt the second explosion. To the point where I reached the window, I could see the smoke from the second explosion. And I very quickly knew this is not supposed to be happening. And I said out loud, I can't believe they did that. I didn't even know who they was, and subconsciously why I even said that, but I realized that this was not supposed to be happening. And I saw everything unfold below. I saw everyone running, and my first attention goes to the fact that my wife is not back yet from the race. And my second thought goes to the fact that I saw a very good friend of mine and his daughter on a pedicab about 20 minutes earlier down by the finish line, and I thought of everyone I knew. So I immediately ran to the elevator, pressed the button, and the doors opened and my wife got off.
Oh, wow.
So I was very thankful there. So I don't tell her what's happened because there's people right there. We were on, I don't know, the 15th whatever floor, and there's people there getting on the elevator, and I don't panic. I just escort her over to our room, and as soon as I close the door, I told her they bombed the finish line. And she said, what? And I explained what I knew. And the news starts coming up, and things are happening very quickly because she wasn't back right away. It was all unfolding very quickly. But it changed me from that moment that this was a real event affecting something that I care about and love very much, and nothing is sacred, it seemed like. From the event standpoint and from the planning standpoint, I start thinking immediately that we need to be vigilant more than ever of public gatherings such as what we put on. And I already had orchestrated in my mind on the drive home, because we decided not to fly. We decided to rent a car. We got the last rental car, I believe, in Boston. How we got it, I don't know. We drove home overnight, and I thought about the event, and we were talking about it with the people in the car, and it was very, very traumatic for everyone. And I started thinking about it from the practical side of what is that going to do to us. And it could have been any public event. It could have been Red, White, and Blue. It could have been a parade. It could have been the arts festival. It just happened to be this event. And as we know now, even the clowns that did this weren't thinking about this from a marathon standpoint. They were just thinking about some event where they could do this. And at the same time, from the public standpoint, from the event standpoint, it put into my thought that we have to be vigilant while also preserving what we care about. We could create a lockdown situation very easily. We could create a TSA situation, but that's also not what we want to do. We need to keep this, as we said earlier, it's still a fun, energetic event and needs to have an element of excitement and fun to it. So we have to weigh it as a fun public event in a country that we feel safe in, while also being vigilant. So what it did for us is just allowed us to be have our eyes open, have our ears open, paying attention, think about things that really probably were a little bit too liberal in regards to the event, be a little bit more secure and safe without making it become a military state. And thankfully in our town, we already have a lot of events that are very secure and safe, but are also have a level of watchfulness to them. Mm-hmm. One of the best events we have here happens every Saturday in the fall with the Home Ohio State Games. There's things going on there that we don't even know about from the police and fire department, that we go and we're out tailgating and people are having fun, but there's a lot of safety and security going on.
Oh yeah.
The lessons that the police and fire have learned are reflected in our event, and they're reflected in the Arts Festival and in Red, White, and Blue. So the good thing is we have a very strong community here of police and fire and law enforcement who are doing a good job to keep us safe. And a lot of those things have carried forth right into what we're doing with our event. So the lessons that Boston learned, and the lessons that Cap City learned, and the Komen Race for the Cure, and all those different events carried over into what we were doing. So it didn't change things for us. It just made us more reflective and also made us a little smarter.
So one of the things you did was clear gear check bags. Mm-hmm. And did that work out well? I never check anything, so I don't know how it went.
It worked so well that instead of having hundreds of bags left over that we tend to have each year, that people, for whatever reason, they get mismarked or the tags fell off or whatever. We had, I believe, 11 bags that were left over.
Oh my gosh.
A couple were things that you wouldn't have, they either chose not to return. There was an apple in there or maybe an old t-shirt. There was like 4 bags that maybe, you know, that people needed back. But that was it. I think the system worked really well.
Okay.
And especially on a year when it ended up being colder, so a lot of people checked a bag, it seemed to work out well. And I just think people were also very smart to begin with. They didn't bring in the kitchen sink, which in some years people brought in steamer trunks and backpacks and duffel bags and all sorts of luggage of all sorts. Now it was a very consistent, everyone knew, and it made life a lot easier.
Like they checked out of their hotel and some left people their brought entire their, suitcase?
Some people brought a suitcase. They
that
would bring
shocks
it.
Me.
It was crazy. You would like, you wondered how in the world someone got this down there. But yeah, there was seriously all
sorts
of...
would have never occurred to me in a million years.
Yeah, but that's part of what some you experienced. Some people have never done this before, so they're thinking, well, I'll just take my bag. Yeah, so it's amazing some of the things that you'd find.
Well, and I noticed that you had fencing that prevented the crowds from getting too close to the corrals this year.
Yeah, yeah.
And how did that work out?
You know, it worked very well. It was very difficult having the openness at the State House that we had from year to year, because the State House in and of itself is somewhat of a restricting area. You've got little cubby holes and little walkways and fencing here and no fencing there, and there was no consistency to it. So when you try to move an event of 18,000 people plus their family and friends, plus strollers possibly or people carrying all sorts of things, it made it very congested. So by having an athlete-only area and then restricting the spectators to basically to the corner of Third and Broad and to the bleacher areas of that, it just made it more consistent. The spectators really don't need to be where the athletes are and vice versa. When you're there to take part in the event, you should be down there and getting yourself focused and organized, maybe using the restrooms, but otherwise, say goodbye to your family and friends. Let them go be comfortable in an area where they can see you and cheer for you, and you can be around the other athletes and kind of take part in the event, which is really what it worked out to a positive this year.
What I noticed this year was that we arrived about the same time we normally do. And well, actually maybe a little bit earlier because we were worried about traffic.
Yeah.
But otherwise, we were able to walk straight to our corral and there were no problems. And in the past, I can remember having to fight through people like crazy to get to our corral, and we kept wondering, what are all these people doing here? Now we know.
That's exactly right. And I learned 2 years ago, I put myself back in between the C corral and the B corral and the C corral. I was literally in the field. I was not at the start line on the stage or whatever for the start of the race in 2012 because I wanted to see what is going on back here. What's this experience like? And there
it's
was
crazy.
Everybody. There were families. So this year, I was off the stage walking around, and I was the only person walking along the corrals with 10 minutes to go.
Right.
Because the system had worked, and it worked for what it was intended. Now, again, the drawback this year is it was extremely cold.
Yes.
We asked people to arrive early because of the challenges of getting 18,000 people to go from point A to point B.
Right.
But the problem is I can't guarantee what the weather is going to be like. So it was colder this year. Some people came down and they turned their bags in, but yet they didn't keep their throwaway clothing, so they were cold. So a solution that we've come up for next year is we're going to look into having some of those warming, what do they call them?
Those would be wonderful.
Outdoor warming, they're not warming tents, they're warming heaters, basically.
Yeah, oh, those would be wonderful.
And then we're also going to try to work it out where maybe some of the other corrals, maybe the C and D corral, we're going to try to time it out to what they maybe can arrive maybe 15 or 20 minutes after the other groups, maybe have it as a staggered type of thing.
Okay.
They're still going to get their own fireworks. They can also have the warming areas, but they're not going to be so restricted to where they need to be there a full hour before everybody else, because we can take advantage of it.
Yeah, because were we like 15 minutes after everybody else had left? Was that what it was? Okay. Yeah, that worked out. That was really worked out really well. And I like the fact that we have corrals now, because, you know, even though I'm in the last corral, there are a lot of people who really overestimate how fast they are. And even though I enjoy passing people, I don't like having to pass so many people all at one time.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I can imagine how difficult it is for the people who are faster than I am having to go around people like that too. I mean, at least for me, I can see them and I can plan to go around them. It's not like I'm right on top of them immediately.
Right.
That would be really nice to have the heaters. And what were and the when you had the fencing, people had to show the race number to get in. And I only saw one person that looked like they didn't have a race number on, and I figured there had to be a really good reason why that person was in there. When we did Cap City right after Boston, they actually had all of the on-street trash cans sealed off. Did you have to do anything like that?
Yes. So lessons that were learned at Cap City and Komen and even the Ohio State Games and the Arts Festival and Red, White, and Boom, all those events, it's the same team from the police and fire department.
Right.
The bomb squad's the bomb squad. And so all the lessons they've learned, as well as some lessons that we've learned. I actually did a half marathon a year before Boston. It was in Monterey, California, and they had the trash cans covered. And the reason that I thought that was such a good idea is because it was a public park and the trash cans were not overflowing.
Mm-hmm.
We have a terrible problem down at our finish line of the public trash cans. They have a sliding lid and a small hole at the top, and they get jammed up with trash and garbage, and they're just unsightly. So we were going to cover our cans before Boston happened, because if we have our own trash cans and we can manage the trash flow. We don't have to mess around with, I mean, I have pulled baby diapers out of a city trash can that got stuck in that lid, and I said to myself, I'm never doing that again. And again, that's a hands-on race director for you.
Oh, yeah,
but I'm
literally.
I'm not going to deal with that, so we're going to cover those up. So that was one of those things we actually were going to do from an aesthetic reason as opposed to the safety reason. Ultimately, we did do that. We also learned about things like having consistency with our volunteers. The reason we have our volunteers dressed in the same shirt is partly because of what the Bomb Squad learned at an event where there was a volunteer dragging a trash can that had been emptied over to an area to place it back in a park. Well, that volunteer was not dressed in one of the shirts. And they didn't realize, is this a volunteer or is this just some random person dragging this trash can that happens to have a bomb in it? Or so,
right.
You know, so working with it, we learned some lessons from them. Never would have thought in a million years. You know, we seal up our portable bathrooms with zip ties so no one's bothering them the night before. The Bomb Squad said you should do that with a certain color zip tie that only you know and we know.
Oh.
I'm like, well, why? They said, because anybody can go out and get clear colored zip ties. So our zip ties this year were a certain color, and they knew if one of those was open,
reclosed,
but the zip tie's missing, it didn't mean there was a bomb in it. It might have just meant somebody was out and decided they needed to use a restroom, and so they broke it open because they're just plastic. But then they could go in and treat it a little bit more, so they checked it. They'd open it. The dog might go in and smell around and make sure there's no problems. Exactly. But then they just put it, we gave them the zip ties to put back on, and everything was great. So,
just and I imagine you're going to change the color every year so
exactly.
that there's no pattern.
Yeah. And little lessons you learn that from their experiences and vice versa. Hopefully, there's something that they learned from our event that they'll pass on to some events this year. But it's just being vigilant. It's not going crazy. It's not using metal detectors and things. I'm making it such an unseemly event. We still want to be safe, but we also don't want to take away rights and liberties.
Oh, well, I did notice that you didn't fire the cannon this year.
Very true. Why is that? You know, the cannon, when I heard that explosion at the Boston Marathon finish line, first thing was, wow, they set off a cannon. Before people emailed me to say, I hope we don't have the cannon at Columbus this year, we took it off the table. There's no reason why we need to be forcing explosions. Neat idea in theory, historical canon and all that, significance, not important enough to get rid of.
Scared enough people last
Scared
year for no reason.
Scared enough people for no reason. That's right.
Well, I thought it went off very smoothly, and I was really happy with the starting area. I was cold, but you can't control the weather, even though race directors would wish they could. But I thought it all went really, really well, and I like the fact there were fewer crowds, and we got here early enough that we were able to get wherever we wanted. We didn't get stuck in the huge traffic jam that a bunch of people got stuck in.
Yeah.
I don't know how that happens.
Well, and I do. It's because we need to work better with the police to make sure that we're putting traffic police on some of the main intersections.
Oh.
And it's something that we work on. We need to do more of it. We need to have better directional staff or we need to have the parking lot companies providing attendants with flashlights because it's dark, directing people into the parking lots. We do some of that around the arena district. We need to do more of it. It's just, there's so many things. It's funny, you talked about fireworks in the very beginning. The reason we have fireworks is because the dark was a negative. The race starts in the dark.
Right.
And I thought to myself, well, let's turn this into a positive. Well, fireworks are very positive, they're fun, and I stole it straight out of Disney. Disney has fireworks at 5 in the morning, we're going to have fireworks at 7:45 in the morning, or 7:30 in the morning, and it's because instead of having a negative, let's turn it into a positive. The negative was, it was too dark to have a flyover.
Yeah.
They used to have a flyover with the race.
I remember.
And we're no longer allowed to do it because of the daylight. And that was the negative, that's like, people like, gosh, I wish we could do something instead of a flyover. I said, well, let's do fireworks. So it was just one of those ideas that came up out of turning a lemon into lemonade.
And it's how fortunate that the one short building in downtown, you have access to the roof.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Well, and talking about weather and not being able to control it, two big races had to cancel their events this year. It was Dallas What's Dallas's full name?
It used to be called the White Rock Marathon.
Yeah, I can't remember what
it's called. I think
they've
changed it now, just the Dallas Marathon.
Okay. And then St. Jude in Memphis had to cancel too. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that there are probably 100 little races in between there that were all that weekend too that had to cancel.
Well, even if you go back a year ago with New York.
Oh, yeah. So what kind of a weather policy does Columbus have?
Well, it's interesting. One of the things that I did today, I was supposed to be at Dallas, and thankfully never left, because to be stuck in Dallas Airport, I know people who were stuck for 30 and 40 hours in the airport.
At least it's a nice airport.
Yeah, exactly. I even looked into the point of the insurance policies, starting to look into that a little bit. Now, we've been very fortunate to have great weather here. The third week of October in Columbus, literally the last 7 years have been fantastic, and hopefully that streak continues. But
knock on wood.
I do a lot of that. As that gets closer, my knuckles tend to be sore. It's one of those things that the weather policy is such that we, first and foremost, our weather policy is based on safety. I have gone out on the course myself and found every bridge and overpass and parking garage and place that we can hide people in the event of a storm blowing in. If a tornado comes in during our race, we have a plan where our waterstop captains, so we have 20 people at 20 locations keeping an eye out to stop the race if we have to, and put those people in a safe place.
Really?
So our captains, I have this list that if you're in Bexley and you're near mile 4 and 5 at the waterstop, you would then be directed to the parking garage at Capital University. Or you'd be directed at mile 5 and 6 at the bridge that is off of Nelson, between Nelson and, what's the road? Franklin Park West.
Okay.
There's a train bridge.
Okay.
And under that, people can be, same thing as on Broad Street, at Broad near Nelson, the train trestle there. Is an area where we would have people hide in case of bad weather. The State House parking garage, on and on and on. I have scoped out all these locations and instructed everybody. So that's if something were to happen. If the weather were bad before the race, we may delay it. If there's lightning, we certainly would delay it. If there was a terrible situation where the weather was so bad we couldn't start it, we might have to get into a cancellation situation. That's why it's very strongly stated and worded in our waivers and in our website, cancellation policy, and unfortunately there's no refunds type of situation. Now, is that the case where we would invariably never reschedule the race? I can't say that. It would be very difficult to do that, to reschedule the race for the following weekend or whatever, especially because we have about 40% of our field comes from outside of Central Ohio. Or even people that live here, their schedule changes. You might be traveling or you're doing another event. But we certainly would work to see what we could work out. But
and we have football.
And we have football, right. So there's a lot of challenges, but to work around schedule-wise. And I cannot imagine what the heartache that the organizers, knowing what I put into this event and the personal stake that I try to have, I can't imagine how much hurt and heartache goes into having to cancel the event. But safety is the number one, absolutely bottom line rule that we follow. And we will never compromise the safety and security of somebody versus forcing it just because people feel that it was safe enough. I can't go to sleep at night knowing that it was, I put anyone in harm's way. So that's going to be the first rule. But knock on wood, we don't have to get into that situation.
I actually did the Indy Mini Marathon 1 year when they had to stop timing because it got too hot, and I was in line for PR. And of course, when you know, there was the one race where my watch malfunctioned, so I was basing my PR based on watching the clocks, and so I didn't know what my finish time was because they stopped the clocks when I was at the 13 mile mark, and I only had a tenth of a mile to go. I was
terrible.
Frustrated.
It's frustrating and terrible situation, and you just. You know, we hopefully can continue to just be able to hopefully by starting in earlier in the morning and hopefully being in the third weekend of October and
on and on. November was definitely worse.
It was. It was. And, you know, even a week earlier was Chicago, where it was 90 degrees one year.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the next year was Columbus, and it was beautiful. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, or just maybe we just continue to be lucky.
So as a race director, what do you think your biggest headache is? Or what causes you? I know safety is one of them.
Yeah,
but.
No, weather is definitely the thing. I am sweating out the weather so much because I start looking at the 30-day outlook, and everybody tells me not to, and so I try not to, and then I obsessively go back to it and look. That's a big challenge. The other, I think though, the weather, take the weather out of it, it's the uncertainty of what the community is doing leading up to the event. There has been times where race week, a construction project happens. I will tell you that this year, we had a water main break on the Friday of our race in Upper Arlington.
Oh my gosh,
and
I had no clue.
It was at the corner of Northwest or North Star and Guilford, and they were tapping the fire hydrant for us to have a water source, and the water main broke. Well, it was broken to where it was causing pressure, and I don't believe we ended up using the water source there, but it wasn't bad enough that they did not tear the road up. I was on the phone with people Saturday, still, they're going to delay the work until after the race.
Well, you got lucky.
I got lucky, but at the same time, there's things like that can happen. There's been all the uncertainty of what might happen with traffic problems or road construction. 4th Street was supposed to be closed at the intersection of Town and 4th, and the city delayed that project until Monday because of the race coming through. So it's good.
Nice.
I'd rather be lucky than good, but it's also good to have relationships with the city and with the municipal leadership to make sure that they've got our back. And you know, those are the things that keep me up at night. Right now, what's keeping me up at night is the crossroads project of I-71 and I-70. It's affecting us. We are not going to know for a while which bridge we may get to use coming back from Bexley. We're hoping it's going to continue to be Town Street, but if it's not Town Street, it'll be Oak Street. If it's not Oak Street, it's going to be Broad. But we have these contingencies. Luckily,
okay,
the way the city is laid out is whichever street we end up using, the distances will be the same. We're
yep.
going to measure all three, but to reach a certain corner is where we need to be to take our measurements from.
Yeah.
And as long as they all come out the same, we're okay. But we'll be certified in three different ways just to keep it safe.
That's pretty funny. So what is as a race director, what is your biggest thrill and what makes you really excited about the race or about working every day?
You know, I say when it's over, but I don't mean that because I'm happy it's over. It's when it's over and it went well and everything came together. There's so many challenges. I lose so much sleep, and there's times during September and October that I'm just shaking my head saying, why am I doing this? This is so stressful, and I'm so hard on myself. And I think because I care so much about the event, I want it to go so well. And when it comes off without a hitch or with hitches that we can manage and everybody is safe, then I feel good about it. And that thrills me. But I also feel that seeing people get so excited about it and seeing them get excited about it again, like you said, where people are looking forward to it and are feeling excited, and I'm watching Facebook and people are saying it's my first one and I can't wait and I'm so nervous. That to me, because I know what it's like as a participant. I've been that person where I'm so nervous about my first event, or I'm trying to do my best or whatever's going on. That keeps me going. That keeps me motivated. The other thing that is a new feature now for me, it's been half of my career as a race director doing it for 4 years, and two of those years with this partnership with Nationwide Children's Hospital.
Oh yeah.
That has just made it for me worth doing it. No matter how stressed and how concerned and how scared and overwhelmed I become with the event, at the end of the day, when I'm able to go back and see what it's doing for a community that I love very much and an institution that is so important to our community and what it's doing, and those kids, it makes it worth it. I get very choked up, as I'm starting to do now, because it's it isn't life or death for us as an athlete to do this. It's a great accomplishment and it's a fun event, but it really is life or death for some of those kids. And to know that we're in some small way contributing to hopefully helping, whether it's a cure or just keeping a kid feeling better and helping them get better, then it feels like I'm doing something. And you don't always feel that as an athlete. We go out and you know, you've traveled around and done these events. And it's somewhat of an egotistical, self-centered activity. But when you're able to give back and help something in the community, it does make it feel a little bit better.
Yeah. And I have to tell you that Angel Mile is a killer. I have kids, so when I'm at that point, I pretty much have to not look, because if I were to see the parents standing there, oh, it would just kill me. Yeah. So I can't even look.
I understand. I cry. The board of directors laughs, and a lot of my friends laugh at these different events. They say they jokingly say they take bets in the back on when I'm going to cry, because I just I think about those kids. I've met those families who have lost children, who came to us and said, we want to be part of this. We didn't say we need to make this happen so we can really take advantage of the emotion. The family said, we want to be part of this. We want our children to be remembered. And even the kids that are out there on the course, you know, just like anything, you have people that are so supportive and you have other people saying, oh gosh, that seems so so negative to have those kids out there. But the kids are the ones that want to be part of it. You know, this year we added the alumni mile. Now we have 2 years of alumni. We can't keep those kids away from the event. So it's there's so much positive to
Which
it.
Mile was the alumni mile?
I believe it was 19.
Okay.
So it's just... It is an event. It's become a community event, and I will say too, it is also what's going to preserve this event in the long term within this community. Because right or wrong, not everybody loves the fact that the streets are being closed
right.
down for hours at a time, and not everybody loves the fact that it's coming through their neighborhood. We might think that we're all special, important people as runners and walkers, but not everybody feels that way. But it's kind of hard to argue when it's for the kids.
Right.
People are sort of, well, you know, I'm okay if the streets are closed for a couple hours because it's for the kids. And if that's how people feel, then that's great.
There is a house in Old Town that has a huge party on their front porch. They love the marathon.
They do. I love those people. And it's exciting that they've been supportive and they come out here.
Oh, they're so fun. They're fun. And there are a couple other places where families have parties, and you can tell that they're drinking either mimosas or Bloody Marys, because they're having way too much fun for coffee.
You know, I haven't gotten to see that in a number of years, but when I do the Twin Cities Marathon, I had the chance to do that a couple times, and I will see those same thing, families who can tell for years they've been doing this, and that's the feeling that I understand now we have, and
right.
It's so neat to see. I understand, especially this past year, now that we've got some momentum with children's, the community seems to be coming out more. There are more spectators than ever.
Oh, yes.
There's just a good, strong feeling that this is a community event, like a Red, White, and Boom, like an arts festival, like whatever those other, like the parades in different communities, that we're starting to see people are putting it on their calendar. And I'm very proud of that, that we can be part of the fabric that is the Columbus community.
And what I really love is the competition to have the best sign. There were some amazingly good signs this year.
That's so much. That just makes it so much fun.
It does.
You know?
It gives you something to laugh about while you're going by.
That's right.
Okay. I do have a couple questions from Facebook.
Okay.
I had mentioned my friend Deb earlier. Mm-hmm. First of all, she wanted me to thank you for being walker friendly.
You're welcome.
And she also wanted to know if you would consider doing cotton t-shirts here.
You know, it's funny. I am a fan of cotton. I love cotton, and some of my favorite shirts are cotton. The situation is such that right now we have an agreement with Nike, and so we have the Nike clothing, but I would not say never. I would never say never. I also would say keep the cards and letters coming in terms of the comments. That's the type of thing, the feedback that we get is what allows us to make changes. I will never act like we are insulated or in a bubble. That back and forth dialogue of people offering suggestions, whether it's a cotton shirt or a certain type of food, The reason that we had the foods that we had this year at our food station that we added this year at Mile 23 were we had oranges and pretzels and some candies and things like that for the marathoners was directly because of Facebook. We asked people what they wanted. So that's the only way that, that's the best way that we're going to learn what people want is by offering suggestions like that.
And I have to say that even though I love the technical shirts and ever since you've had women's cut shirts, I've been wearing them all the time because they actually fit me. It is so frustrating to get a man's small shirt, and it's so big on me. I give it to my son who played football in high school, and he's not a small guy. So yeah, that's very, very frustrating. So I always wear my Columbus Marathon shirts because they fit. But one of my favorite all-time shirts are the ones I used to get from Air Force that were the long-sleeve cotton ones. Oh, those are amazing. I have four of them. And I will wear them until they are threads because they fit well and they're comfortable.
And they're sturdy.
And they look great with jeans.
Yep.
Yeah, technical shirts, I don't wear jeans. I only wear them when I'm doing something athletic.
Yeah.
So I kind of like being able to wear shirts other times. Okay, and I have Lauren and Kathy both wanted to know if you have tips for first-time marathoners.
I can guarantee a PR if you finish. And I joke about that, but it's really true. The thing that I learned, and I learned the hard way in my first marathon, and I didn't enjoy it while I look back upon it fondly as being Columbus, I also suffered in my first marathon in Columbus because I was so serious. And I just didn't enjoy it for the sake of what it was as an accomplishment. I was frustrated because I didn't qualify for the Boston Marathon or I didn't beat so-and-so. That's crazy. I needed to look back and I needed to think about it from the fun that it is. At the same time, first-time marathoners should take it seriously in regards to the preparation.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot fool the marathon. You cannot fool the half marathon. Mm-hmm. You're gonna fool it. You're gonna finish more quickly, but you can't fool it. It's still going to be suffering if you don't do it the right way. That's why, as a first-timer, I would recommend maybe not going crazy and reading every single thing out there on the internet and every book, because you don't need to go into debt learning how to do this. It's literally putting one foot in front of the other. But join a group, maybe get a training program, and follow that program and stick to it, because it will pay dividends. As a first-timer, you don't need to go into it worrying about your time as much as you should still go into it taking it seriously with regards to the distance that you're going to cover, and cover the training distances, and take your nutrition seriously. You don't have to become so vigilant where you're punishing yourself and having percentage of carbs and fats and so on and so forth, but you can also improve your diet a little bit and do the things that you need to do. Drink more water, which is something I've never learned, and I still struggle with that. But joining a group is also a fun way to accomplish mm-hmm. this goal together as a first timer, because being around other people who are doing it for the first time, all of a sudden now you don't have to be afraid. You've got this army of people with you that you're all assaulting this challenge together.
And I have to say that I've had more fun at races I've done with people than races I've done alone.
That's right.
And even though now a group, we have a fairly big group that does Columbus. Well, we think we're a big group, but we have a fairly big group that starts in Corral D, and we spread out pretty quickly, and so we don't see each other throughout the race. But we're always there at the start, and we're always there at the finish, and it's really fun at least being able to talk about what you did during the race or
right,
who
right.
you met during the race or whatever.
Right.
I really enjoy that part of it.
We're working harder to emphasize and celebrate the first time we experience. This year, we added a booth at our expo that was staffed by our board of directors. It was the first-timers booth.
Oh, I missed it.
Yeah, you probably weren't looking at this, you're not a first-timer. If you went to the booth, you could get any question answered, and they gave you a bib to put on the back of your shirt that said, it's my first time. It's my first half marathon, or it's my first marathon. And that then celebrated it. And people really got a kick out of that. We also, you talked earlier about how it's become, seems to be a level of excitement and energy. It's because we try to add fun things, and there's also no new ideas out there. One thing that we started doing 2 years ago, which we did again this year, is we had a banner that had people's birthday weekend. There's a banner at the expo that everyone was having a birthday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday of race weekend. We put their name on that banner. Well, we took it one step further this year, an idea that I stole from Disney, is I went through all of our race packets, and everybody whose birthday was that race weekend, I put in their packet a button that said, "It's my birthday."
Oh, how
and,
cute.
And had our logo on it. It was a lot of fun. And it was, it's a special little touch that when people got that, I saw people wearing their button, and it's supposed to be a celebration.
That's fun.
Sure, you can still make it a celebration while also trying to do your best or trying to win or whatever your goal is. Doesn't mean it shouldn't be fun.
Yeah. Okay, and this one really is not a question, but Lisa with Goodwill, do you know Lisa?
Yes, very much.
She says, "I don't run, and I have no running questions, but you can tell him I think he's the greatest." Goodwill Columbus appreciates everything he did for our organization.
You know, we have such a wonderful relationship with Goodwill. I am so proud of the relationship because of the brainchild that came out of our partnership. You go to a race from out of town or otherwise, you come downtown and you realize at packet pickup, oh gosh, I don't have any throwaway clothing. It's supposed to be cold. So our partnership with Goodwill started when they would come to our race and pick up clothing at the start line. Mm-hmm. A lot of throwaway clothing. And instead of throwing it away, it goes to Goodwill. So we expanded that relationship, and I thought to myself, you know, if people are throwing clothing away, where are they going to get that clothing? Well, let's come up with this idea. So Goodwill sells throwaway clothing at our expo. And, you know, it's not a bad name, not a bad phrase to say throwaway clothing. Who cares? Goodwill gets the clothing at the start line when it gets tossed aside, and then they sell it to people the next year as throwaway clothing. And yeah. I love that partnership.
Yeah, they sell it over and over again.
It's such and so they make money on it. You know, we give them free space at the expo, so there's no money as far as going out of pocket for them. They provide the volunteers to pick up the clothing for us, so we get that taken care of. And I'm just so proud of that. I want to see that happen across the country. And
that's a great idea.
Yeah, I love that idea.
If I would have known you had that, because I missed it last year somehow, but I went to Volunteers of America to buy my throwaway clothing.
Same concept,
and
yeah.
It was the day before the expo, yeah. And I thought, oh man, if I would have known, I would have come here instead.
But then we also took the partnership one step further this year, and we we took it two steps further. Number one, our goodie bags were prepared by Goodwill. We shipped all of the items that were going to go in the bags, plus the bags, to Goodwill. And in the weeks leading up to the race, they actually prepared them for us.
Now,
nice. They have a program there to have people, underutilized workforce type of things,
right.
and different programs, and they took care of that for us. And then we also worked with them to do cleanup at our start and finish line. We had teams from Goodwill come down to take care of trash pickup, things
nice.
Like that. And that generated revenue for them as well. So the programs are benefiting, they're putting people to work, we're getting the job done that we need to be done, and we're going to continue that relationship in the future. So I'm very
pleased.
And
those are the two jobs that are hardest to get the volunteers for.
They are absolutely so difficult. So I was super pleased by that.
Well, I actually, there are two things I hadn't asked you about first. Mm-hmm. That I almost hate to go into something else because it was such a nice ending. How many staff do you have?
So, in the course of the year, there's about 18 to 20 people that have that are involved with the race, plus the 10-member board of directors, and that is as well-defined as myself doing this year-round, down to interns that we have that are only involved in the event for a short period of time. So it's a varied amount of involvement. The amount that people have their hands involved in the event might be a few months up to year-round. The next person who's probably involved nearly as much, but not quite as much, is our PR and media person. She actually has her own business, and we're one of her clients. But then beyond that, it kind of varies. There's not a lot for our water stop coordinator to be doing in the middle of February and March. But as we're gearing up and we're planning planning things throughout the year. I'll bring him involved maybe in June or July.
Okay.
It really starts with we have a team retreat in April. We get everybody together, talk about what's going on, you know, thank everybody again. Here's the feedback we had. Here's the survey results, so on and so forth from last year. Here's some things we're going to fix, and here's how we're going to do it. And then we kind of outline what the year is going to look like with meetings and schedules and things like that. And then it kind of ramps up, and then we get to October, and we're sick of each other, and everybody kind of goes their own way in November, December, and we sort of, the winter we kind of hibernate. They hibernate. I'm doing things year-round, from permitting to sponsorship relationships. Now with the hospital, we're talking about improvements and new things, so that it keeps me pretty busy.
And how many volunteers do you typically
have? We continue to grow that, and we're up to, last year we had 3,000 volunteers.
Wow.
Yeah, and I believe we'll have more in 2014.
Okay.
One of the best benefits that we've had with regards to the partnership with the hospital is volunteers. Many companies are getting involved because sponsors of the hospital. We do not, as an event, see any of those dollars. So when a company becomes a sponsor of a mile, for example, that money goes right to the hospital.
Nice.
And that's what's great about our event. We're self-sustaining, where we don't have to have the monies that go toward the hospital coming to us. And at the same time, we're getting volunteers, because those companies that are providing monies to the hospital also have employees that maybe don't want to run or walk, but they want to get involved. So then a company might sponsor a water stop, and they provide 100 people. So I think we're going to continue to see that that symbiotic relationship to our benefit. And I'm probably more thrilled about that than the dollars are great, they go to the hospital, but we love having more people involved.
Oh yeah, and especially having your water stop staffed. Oh, what another huge pain that is.
It's tough. And I'm super excited to see those companies getting involved.
Especially when it's cold.
Yeah, exactly.
But there were several in the first half who seemed like they had a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's the difference between the company getting them and then just randomly getting people.
And we still have opportunities for other people, but to get involved, there's plenty of jobs that we have people year after year. We have people who have volunteered all 34 years. It's crazy, and that's great. And we'll hopefully continue to see that. But with this new wave of spirit among the businesses and community getting involved, that's just going to be help for the event to be sustaining it that long term.
Okay, now this is going to be a really weird question after everything else. Port-a-johns.
Yes.
I really have expected that to be your biggest headache.
You know, we have 450 of them this year. We have more and more. We've added more and more each year. And
it still seems to be the number one complaint on your Facebook page.
But we also had a lot of people saying thank you. So the fact that we got thank yous means we're getting better. It is. It's, look, I've been there as a participant. I know what it's like. Everybody wants their own, and they only want it for an hour, and then they're done with it. It's the biggest, if you looked at the amount of use per dollar, it's probably the least economical expenditure, but the most important expenditure.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're only used for a short period of time, and then they sit dormant for hours and hours and hours. But, we're going to continue to make them better, continue to add more and more. I've got some fixes already for this year on the course. We know we need to add some more. And, it is what it is. We realize that, and we'll always continue to try to get better.
The ones on High Street by the last corral that were underneath the bike rack, mm-hmm. No one saw them.
Yeah.
There was never a line.
And
no one ever saw those.
One of the fixes that we're going to have, which because of not only port-a-johns, but also just the starting area in general, is we need to add more light. Because again, it's dark. If we have lights, then people can see things. And I have tried to come up with a way to light up the portable batteries, putting glow sticks on them, or doing like the holiday Christmas tree lights when it Christmas. You know what a Christmas tree sale is? You're driving down High Street and you see those lights strung up. That's what we want to do at the start to light up the restroom, so people know that's the restroom areas. And we're gonna succeed with that. We're gonna find a way to make that work.
Spotlights might be a little bit embarrassing, but
spotlights, correct.
Okay, I do not have any other questions. Is there anything I did not ask you about that you wanted to talk about?
You know, you covered everything. And I just think...
a lot longer than I told you we would, too.
That's okay. Yeah, I feel very strongly that the event is getting better and is a community event that will get better with the community's involvement. So I would always encourage people to just continue to provide the feedback and always feel like they've got someone who's going to listen, because as long as I'm involved, I'll keep listening and trying to do better. So you asked many of the things that weigh on me every single day. I'm always thinking about these things. So thank you.
And I really enjoy the race, and it's so much fun, and I just want to let you know the walkers do appreciate everything you've done to include us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for the interview.
You're very welcome.
Would you walk with me? And if you walk with me, I'll walk with you for eternity.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Darris Blackford. It was a lot of fun to do, and I hope that fun came through. For future episodes of the Walk Podcast, I have scheduled an interview with a massage therapist, a shoe store owner, and a group of friends of mine are going to be doing a year in review of the races we did in 2013. I hope you'll come back and listen to those. As always, I'd like to end this podcast by saying, why run slow when you can walk really, really fast?
Walk with me. Would you walk with me? And if you walk with me, I'll walk with you for eternity.
The Walk With Me theme song was written by Gordon Lehman, recorded at Real Time Audio in Denton, Texas. The recording engineer is Eric Delagarde. It was produced by Eric Delagarde and Gordon Lehman. The vocals by Whitney Wilson, and the cello by Madeline Hansen. Guitar and Fender Rhodes were played by Gordon Lehman. Thanks, Gordon, for doing this for me. I appreciate it. Here's the full song.
By the hand and lead you to the fountain. Would you walk into my heart? Would you walk into my being? And if you walk into my heart, this will just be the start of a new world you'll be seeing. Walk with me. Would you walk with me? And if you walk with me, I'll walk with you for eternity.
And if you walk with me, I'll walk.